Hey, this week the pod turns 11. I can't believe we didn't have a big bash when we turned 10 years old but last week, but we were all distracted with Kyprios and McLean on. He does that to us. This week was kind of a similar thing. We have two more people on the podcast, but this time it's two different interviews. Trade deadline getting closer. We will chat with my good buddy, TSN's Darren Dreger. He will bring us up to date on all the happenings around the National Hockey League and a whole bunch of other stuff. I just tend to wander with Dreger because we've been together for 30 plus years. And then we'll chat with Minnesota general manager, Billy Guerin, who stops by from Las Vegas from the general manager's suite. Did you know managers get really cool accommodations when they're on the road? We'll chat with the Minnesota Wild, who are having one heck of a season. It's the Chirp with Darren Millard.
Really growing on me, Stammer. Really starting to grow on me.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Shut up!
We are in the worldwide headquarters of the Chirp podcast with Darren Millard. And as I record this, there's about six teams that are what I would consider out of it in the National Hockey League playoff race. And I'm not sure that that number necessarily grows before the NHL trade deadline on April 12th. So we're going to dive into what's going to happen on trade deadline day or the days leading up to it. Normally, this podcast is pretty undated. And what I mean by that is that the Mark Stone episode, you can listen to it right now, and it's just as good as it was when we released it. Mike Tirico, same thing. Who else? Brian Burke. Like a lot of what we talked about, undated, can live forever. They call in the broadcast business, they call it evergreen because it's always in season. I didn't know that until about 5 years ago, but it makes sense. So today is going to be a little bit different because Dreger stuff will not last forever because it all leads up to the NHL trade deadline. But the conversation with Billy Guerin, the general manager of the Minnesota Wild, is much more big picture. A strong statement coming up on the Minnesota Wild, by the way. I am going to admit something and say something that I have never uttered before publicly. I'm looking forward to bringing you that. It's not even a hot take. It's just something that came to me in the last couple of weeks. So Billy Guerin, in just a little bit, he is awesome to talk to. It's not like talking to the general managers that you grew up listening to who were very stoic and very proper and intimidating. Billy's just cool. He just welcomes you in. But first up, Darren Dreger on the Chirp. And Dreger and I do go back to the time when we were both in our early 20s. He was my boss in radio. We don't talk about that a lot, but the trade deadline is our primary discussion. And Dreger is a guy that's one of the great insiders in the National Hockey League right now, working for TSN and NBCSN. And he's got all the happenings. And so we're going to go around the National Hockey League. But he's also a guy, before he became an insider, was like the host of the regional broadcast for the Edmonton Oilers. And it all ties in here because Dregs knew Billy Guerin way back in the day when they were both in Edmonton. Dregs.
Yeah. I got to know Billy really well when he played with the Edmonton Oilers. Obviously, I worked at a small chain called A-Channel back in Edmonton, and they had the Edmonton Oilers right. So I hosted games, and I traveled extensively, obviously, with the club. And those were back in the days when everybody was flying commercial, well, the Canadian teams anyway. So I got to know Billy really, really well and had a lot of good times with him over the years. He's an interesting guy, but a real sharp hockey mind, as you know. And the things that he's done for that Minnesota Wild team in a short period of time have been impressive. So I don't cheer for many guys. We're not supposed to cheer for guys as journalists in the NHL who work around the National Hockey League, but Jimmy Rutherford was a general manager I always quietly cheered for, will continue whatever job he takes next. And Billy Guerin would be on my list as well of guys that you always want to do well because they're good people.
I just like talking to him. It's like talking to your buddy at the bar. It's there's not that covert speaking in code, all that kind of stuff.
So, great storyteller too, man.
Oh, yeah.
He's just got wonderful stories.
You've got trade deadline day on TSN coming up, day-long coverage, and is this your busiest day of the year? I'm trying to think because the draft and there's a lot of stuff happening around there and free agency now. I want to get into the dirt a little bit, but is this the big kahuna still?
Yeah, normally it is. You know that. This year, though, for a myriad of reasons, is different, and it's weird, and every year we get agents and general managers who tell us, look, you know, there's not going to be that many trades. It feels like it's going to be quiet. And then, you know, you get a bunch leading up to the deadline, which kind of gets that wheel circulating. And then deadline day is always busy and we always have a good time with it. And there's always an abundance of news. Now, you know, I'm always amused because it doesn't matter to me. You know, of course you want to break the big trade, but for me, a trade is a trade. So if it involves, you know, a young player or an American League player, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. We're sitting on set here for 8, 9, 10 hours. I just want information to talk about. And, you know, as soon as you get that breaking news sort of animation and all of those things, the guy at home is sitting there going, ooh, this is going to be interesting. And then it turns out to be, you know, Joe Schmo traded for Bill Schmo and, you know, a seventh round draft pick. And they're like, oh my God. But this year it might live up to that for, you know, a ton of different reasons, the cap being what it is, the quarantines between Canada and the United States. But look, again, we all know that owners, especially those who believe that they've invested deeply in getting their team into a position where they should be further along than maybe what they are, they put the heat on their managers, which isn't a bad thing. The managers want to do their work. As long as the resources are there, there isn't a general manager in the league that doesn't want to use those resources to the full extent to make his team better. And I'm hoping that that's going to be the case between now and Monday, because the way we look at the divisions, you know, there's so many fascinating races that above all the financial stuff and the COVID restrictions and all that, that might worry me the most is that, you know, there are a number of teams that are still in the playoff fight that I would have thought would have been in the seller mode to this point. And now they're probably not in that seller mode. So when you amplify that and you combine that with all the other stuff that makes this year bizarre, we could be in for a long day on deadline day.
Before I get too far into this, who would win the trade if you dealt Joe for Bill Schmo? Like, is Joe the better Schmo?
No, you know what? Billy was tougher. Billy had grip to him. He wasn't afraid to go in the dirty areas. So Joe was more of a finesse guy.
The COVID situation and not having fans to capacity, do you think that puts a team on the bubble more apt to sell than load up because the playoff revenue won't be there like you would normally have that carrot?
I mean, that question would have to be discussed at length, I would think, certainly among management, and the owners are way more involved now in hockey operations than they've ever been before. And I can appreciate and understand that. And the owner might go to his general manager and say, hey, you know, for a lot of reasons, we want to make sure that we keep things competitive here, number one. But number two, you know, can we beat this team if we play Team X in the playoffs? You know, or is this going to be just a one and done type of thing? And if it is, are we smarter to move away our unrestricted free agent guys? Because chances are we're not going to be able to. All those conversations happen. And I think that's valid. And I think that that could apply to a number of teams. You know, if I look at the West division, I know you want to go through division by division. It's funny because I was thinking that myself as I'm looking through what St. Louis has going on,
right,
you know, earlier today. I mean, I don't get the sense the St. Louis Blues are ever going to be a team that is going to sell because they don't believe in themselves. But this isn't that. This is a year where, you know, you've faced all kinds of different adversities on and off the ice. Injury bug is hit there. You know, so if you're ever going to take it in the chin and either sit back and do very little or maybe sell off a piece that you know you're not going to be able to sign in the offseason, then maybe that does apply to a team like St. Louis or other clubs as well.
So unpredictable. So let's go through the divisions and we'll talk. I'm just curious about who might be the biggest buyer and who might be the most aggressive seller. And we'll start in the West. You've got the three in Minnesota, Colorado and Vegas who are in, who might be most aggressive there. And, you know, then you get into the weeds of Arizona, San Jose are in the bubble. St. Louis is still in the mix. You really only have two sellers in LA and I don't know whether they're ready to do that in Anaheim.
Yeah. And look, you know, when you talk to Rob Blake, he will say we're not selling. Now, again, define what a seller is. You know, back in the day, a seller was a seller and they moved multiple pieces. And, you know, that maybe doesn't define what a seller is in today's NHL with the salary cap. There's some decisions that Rob Blake has to make on uncertain players. He's got players of interest that teams would like to have. I don't think there's any question about that. But I'm not so sure how active he's going to be. Anaheim is trying, but the pieces that teams would call on from Anaheim are pieces that maybe he doesn't want to trade. You know, Josh Manson's a name that comes to mind. You know, man, wouldn't he look good in a Winnipeg Jets uniform? But, you know, the ask will be real high, as it should be. He's got a no trade clause, so that matters. That factors in his case. You know, Ricard Raquel is another name that we've speculated on broadly, you know, across North American media as a potential. But again, you talk to the Duck sources and they're like, yeah, I mean, we're having conversations, but nothing that seems to be gaining any traction. And, you know, if you look towards the top of the division, Kelly McCrimmon always keeps me on my toes. He's one of those guys. Look, I mean,
for how many years now?
Oh, come on. I mean, dates back to the 90s, early 90s, in fact. But, you know, there's not much not to like about the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, you see it every night. But every team, as strong as they are, as good as they've been, you know, can come up with a case of where they could be stronger. And I'm sure that's the case in Vegas, but, you know, they're basically capped out. So, you know, what are the three scenarios? You know, knock on wood, nobody gets hurt, but, you know, an LTI scenario could be one. Use a broker. You know, maybe that's San Jose, maybe that's Chicago, maybe that's another team that, you know, for a draft pick or something, a sweetener, is willing to park some money. So you've got that, or you go dollar in, dollar out. I mean, those are the three scenarios that Vegas would have to consider. If I look at Colorado, you know, there's always been that kind of suggestion that they still need to upgrade their goaltending. I'm not in that camp. I don't think that they do. No, I think they're okay. I mean, unless, okay, I always say it's like firing a coach. You know, if you're firing a coach in season, that's great. But you damn well better be sure that the guy you're bringing in is better than the guy that you just, you know, kicked to the curb. And sometimes you do that, you know, just to spark your club. So when I look at the goaltending in Colorado, and I mean, hey, you're a decorated goaltender. I mean, I think you still have the worst goals against average with the Dauphin Kings in Manitoba Junior
you're
Hockey.
Such
League.
A jerk.
Is that not true? That might be true.
It definitely is for the AAA Wheat Kings. Midget, it definitely is true there.
Hold on. You played at least one game, did you not, with the Dauphin Kings? And you got lit up.
Yeah, I think I played by five or six and started two season openers and got pulled in both. Like that, Yeah. So I've spread my wealth around.
So I am conceding to your wealth of experience in the position of goal. I don't know. Again, who's available out there, right? And you know,
I'll give you a name, Linus Ullmark.
I don't think he's available.
No, nope.
And only you know only if you have to only if you're willing to overpay. Okay. And I mean maybe Colorado is willing to do that. I like him. But if you're Kevin Adams and you're the Buffalo Sabres, you know, you can't go on a full-on fire sale here. You know, that cycle has got to stop, and it's got to stop with him. So I think they like Linus Ullmark. Again, given where they're at in Buffalo, I guess you have to listen to your point. And it's an interesting name, and it's one that I'm sure teams have called about. You know, you can lump Ristolainen into that group. Sam Reinhart's another one. These are pieces they don't want to trade in Buffalo. But beyond that, so if Buffalo isn't willing to consider Ullmark for less than a King's ransom, you know, who else are we talking about here? Like
Reimer, Dubnyk.
Yeah, I mean, they're all good goalies. There's nothing wrong with them, but do they
upgrade on JoJo?
Yeah, I guess. And look, the one thing we've learned, you know, I didn't think the third goalie story was going to be as big as it's turned out to be this year at the start of the year. You know, I was kind of amused at the goalies that were being placed on waivers and then getting picked up and teams kind of panicking almost a little bit to grab these guys. But holy smokes, now you look around the league and you're like, ooh, you know, Carey Price goes down in Montreal. You know, the Montreal Canadiens in the north are a playoff team, but, you know, it's a good thing they've got some depth in that position in their system. And they've got Jake Allen there, who's a bona fide number one. But now I'm thinking that you better be happy with your goaltending. But Colorado's just so strong in all the other areas that I think that any question they might have, I don't see it as a weakness, question can be overlooked unless something surfaces that makes sense that bolsters that position.
Just to me, it leaves yourself vulnerable to going through the same situation as the last 2 years. Grubauer had trouble 2 years ago, and then we know what happened last year in the bubble. And like, not fool me once, shame on me.
But I, you know, again, I, when you look at the available goalies, and we're not even sure outside of the group that we've just mentioned who legitimately is available or isn't available. You know, I talked to the Oilers brass the other day, and at some point they're going to have to address their goaltending in Edmonton. It's not going to be between now and Monday. And it's not even a consideration because of how good Mike Smith has been. And Mike Smith lets in that stinky one, in my opinion, Eric Staal in overtime. And you're like, ooh, you know, you know, he battles, he's a fierce competitor. He's got, you know, an arm's length of experience, but we're thinking about the playoffs no differently than, you know, your remark on the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, you can't let a goal like that in any playoff round. So goaltending is a precarious spot going into the playoffs this year.
Buyer and seller in the North Division then. Okay. Kyle Dubas, by the way, he would had the big press conference about, what, 3.5 weeks ago and said a bunch of stuff. I haven't seen anything.
No, and look, he's doubled down and maybe even tripled down on those comments. You know, just acknowledging that they're definitely trying to add a top six, top seven forward. And I think they're doing it for a couple of reasons. Number one, obviously, they feel like they need a little bit of extra push there. If they could clone Zach Hyman, that would be perfect because then they could just split them and they could play on all four lines. But there's a little backfill to that too. I think if they could get a player that fits that type of scenario, that and in a perfect world, maybe as a year or two a term, maybe that puts a little bit of heat on Hyman, right? He's a pending unrestricted free agent. You know, does he really want to go to free agency? He loves Toronto. He's a local guy. He's such a wonderful fit here. It's hard to imagine him not staying in Toronto, but what if he doesn't? I mean, the cap isn't going up and man, he's earned his payday. So Toronto needs to be thinking about what if. But Alex Galchenyuk has been a pleasant surprise for the Maple Leafs too. So because of how public and vocal Dubas has been, he's going to try hard. And he's made it clear that he's willing to part with top prospects, right? And you're talking about Tim Liljegren, Rasmus Sandin to a degree, Nick Robertson to a degree, Amaroff to a degree. But that's got to be the perfect fit. But when you talk about that stuff so openly and then you don't, you know, get it, it doesn't materialize, you know, in this market, man, you know, if things don't go well for the Leafs in the playoffs, he's going to take it between the eyes.
I was surprised that he kind of boxed himself in.
Yeah.
With the comments.
I mean, he must feel like they're there, right? Yeah. He must feel like this is one of those unique years, and it is incredibly unique because the winner of the division crosses over to the conference final. So, you know, maybe you expedite the process if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I think he is starting to talk about, well, we can't just pull this player out of thin air. You know, we're going to push hard, but if we don't get anybody and it turns out to be Alex Galchenyuk who helps us, then that's not a terrible plan B.
Would Josh Manson's openness to Winnipeg help out because his dad played there? Do you think there's anything to that where his dad can say, hey, it's a great city? Or I know he's got the modified no move.
Well, look, I mean, that makes sense to you and I because we spent time in that city and we covered Dave Manson with the Winnipeg Jets and he was beloved there because of the character that he is. And dad probably would be great, feel wonderful about his son following his footsteps. But I just don't get that sense. Yeah. And I don't know, to be fair, I shouldn't have dropped his name only in that he's a name that
he's out there.
It's been speculated. Yeah. But I always wonder about that from a player standpoint that, you know, if my son had been NHL quality, I wonder how involved I would have been in a decision like that. Now, I didn't come close to playing pro hockey, but in this case, it even gets worse, right? Because I'm sure dad is saying, oh, Winnipeg's a great city. You'd love it there, all of those things. Yeah. But at the end of the day, he's a grown man who has earned his trade protection on his contract. And if he doesn't want to go to Winnipeg or he doesn't want to go here or he doesn't want to go there, then that's up to him. But Winnipeg, by the way, will. I mean, Chevy's working hard. You know this. I mean, he's I don't feel like – I think that they like Canola and they like Samberg and they feel like internally those guys can help them. They're just not quite ready yet. They're not playoff ready yet. And the readiness of their defensive core maybe doesn't match what they've got up front, even though collectively speaking, the character of the Jets blue line is really good. Chevy's just trying to give them a boost, you know, to better their chances of getting out of the division. So Winnipeg for sure is in the buying mode.
Vancouver, Calgary, and Ottawa before we move on to the East.
Yeah. Well, Vancouver right now, and I might date this on you, but they're okay. Focused on Tanner Pearson and getting him signed. So once you get him signed, then that takes a decent trade chip out of the mix. Beyond that, you've got Sutter as a pending UFA. But I think Vancouver's going to be pretty quiet, and their focus is going to be, number one, on getting healthy again. That's priority one. And then in the near future, turning preliminary conversations with Pettersson and Quinn Hughes into real conversations about extending those contracts. Calgary, man, I don't know what is happening there. I mean, you know, Brad Trilobing has done a ton of work over the years, and a lot of it, you know, this past offseason, bringing in a world-class goaltender, Jacob Markstrom, Chris Tanev was a nice add. And it just, there's something that doesn't work there. And, you know, we in the media often talk about, well, they need a culture change. Well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know, does that mean Johnny Gaudreau's got to go or Sean Monahan, one of those pieces? I mean, that's what you're talking about. You're not talking about moving Sam Bennett or a lower end piece like that. I don't know how you make that happen between now and the trade deadline. And what's more disappointing is the fact that they bring in an old friend of the organization, Daryl Sutter. And he's holding guys accountable. That's the only way he knows. But there's been almost zero bounce back, almost zero. And that's even more alarming. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how Tree figures this out. I mean, I think the messaging out there is that basically everybody is available within reason. So Calgary wants to be a bigger player, perhaps a seller. But as of earlier this week, it's still pretty quiet in Calgary.
Yeah, and Minnesota did it without moving Suter or Parise, so it can be done, but that's been a long time happening. Does Ottawa, like, sell off or what?
Yeah, carefully, right? Yeah. Because Pierre Dorion wants to make sure that they keep that internal competition brewing. I mean, that's Ottawa for, I don't know how much you've watched the Sens play this year. I mean, you know, I'm fixated on the North Division. And you kind of, you don't lose track, but you don't spend as much time scouring over the other divisions. Ottawa competes hard. And, you know, the best of the division, they've beaten. They can handle. I think that, again, he looks at his pending free agents. Mike Riley, I think, would be a nice add for somebody on the back end.
I like Mike Riley.
Not much not to like about him. And maybe Ottawa likes him enough to use him almost as an own rental. You keep him and find out if there's a way to extend, you know, just because it's a trade deadline doesn't mean players don't sign after the trade deadline, obviously, but he's an interesting trade chip. Ryan Dzingel, you know what? He landed back in Ottawa and started scoring in bunches. And I was surprised to learn late last week that Dorion had almost zero interest in him. And I don't get that. Mm-hmm. The kid can skate. He's got some scoring upside to him. Looked pretty good last night, so maybe that'll change things again. But he would be another piece. Good Branson's name's out there. You know, teams are always calling on Connor Brown or Nick Paul's had a terrific year. Yeah. But I don't think that Dorion would consider trading either Paul or Connor Brown just because of how important they are to the group. So they could be a player, but might be smaller pieces.
Brown can do so many things for you. In the East, Boston is kind of – in that no man's land, Philadelphia, same thing. Where do they go? And we know New Jersey's out.
Yeah. Well, when is this airing?
This will air today.
Okay. Well, we know that Taylor Hall is not dressing for the Buffalo Sabres. And that always tells us no different. You mentioned New Jersey, Kyle Palmieri. I mean, you're protecting an asset by not playing them. That means that a trade is coming. You just haven't finalized yet. Maybe there's a couple of teams and you're just trying to pressurize the situation. I think Boston's got to add a piece there, you know, either Palmieri or Taylor Hall. They put so much emphasis on success on that one line and they need some help. They need some help. So I wouldn't be surprised if Boston adds a piece like that up front. And they're a market for defense as well. I mean, they've lost a lot in Boston on that back end, obviously, with Torrey Krug and Big Z and all of that. Those aren't pieces that you replace between now and the trade deadline, but maybe they add some depth. Yeah, New Jersey, we talked about, you know, with Kyle Palmieri. Beyond that, probably not a whole lot.
What about Philly? Where's Philly in the mix?
Well, I'm so happy that Carter Hart had a bounce back game. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a good kid, and I just love how hard he competes. He's so fiery. I like watching him play. I got to know him a little bit. He's a good kid. And to go through the struggles that he's gone through this year.
He wears it too, right? He wears it.
You can just see it's eating him alive because he's so fierce in terms of competition. Whether it was delivered the right way, I think Philadelphia managed this in the right way. I don't think many people love Alain Vigneault coming out and saying what he said about Carter Hart. But if he said it publicly, you can only imagine what he said to Carter privately.
Yeah.
But the methodology behind it worked, right? They had a light schedule. So at least in the short term, it appears to have worked. But that's going to be very telling. And I think Chuck hasn't decided, Darren, between now and what he might do on Monday. You know, if he gets a better vibe and a better feel from his goaltending, because that's been their big issue this year, then maybe at the very least he stands pat and allows his guys a chance to battle through and fight for a spot. You know, Scott Laughton's name is out there because he's a pending unrestricted free agent. I understand why his name is out there. In fact, I might have been the first guy to put it out there on NBC. But I like Scotty Laughton. I think that he's a versatile piece. And I don't know why Philadelphia would want to move him unless you're getting something really decent in return. So it could be quiet in Philadelphia, maybe more of the heavy lifting in the offseason if needed.
Potpourri division, the team that they just put everybody together that was kind of left over in no man's land. Tampa Bay, we know, is getting Kucherov back. But like when you have a good season, and I'll talk to Billy about this in a little bit. When you have a great season, I wonder why more teams don't jump on that. And Carolina and Florida are having one of those great seasons. So do you double down on that and really take a run at it? Because we've seen in the past, you can have a good run and there's no guarantee it's going to happen again.
No, you're right. And both Florida and Carolina want to add defense. Florida, it's pretty obvious why with Aaron Ekblad, what a gruesome injury that was. So terrible for a guy who was in the Norris Trophy conversation. They don't want to spend a lot of assets. They don't have a lot of currency in that regard. So it could be difficult. I mean, yeah, I'm sure Billy Zito wants a top four. Whether he can make that happen might be a bit of a stretch. Carolina, there, you know, we talked about Josh Manson earlier. I could see him being a decent fit for the Carolina Hurricanes as well. Whether or not they can make it work, you know, they do have the extra body in goal. So I'm not sure if that's a trade chip that Anaheim would consider. Point being that Donnie Waddell and the Carolina Hurricanes would like to bolster that blue line.
That would be really interesting. I don't mind. What about Dallas and CBJ? Didn't expect them to be.
Yeah, Columbus has to be in selling mode, right?
Nick Foligno?
Nick Foligno, who, you know, again, managers always say, I'm not in the market for a rental. Well, okay, but, you know, a player of that quality, character, all of that established, he does everything, right? Nick Foligno basically can do everything. I mean, we talked about it on TSN on Monday night. He'd be a good ad for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we're lucky. We talked about the Leafs earlier with Dubas and what he might do. I think he'd be a nice ad. So maybe there's that. David Savard's name is
Foligno. Shane Knighty loves Nick Foligno.
Would fit like a glove.
Yeah,
he'd fit like a glove there. But again, I'm not saying it's impossible. It's dollar in, dollar out. Or again, Kelly's got an MBA, right? He's a really smart guy. Smart guy. So he'll figure it out. He'll find a way to park the dollars to make it work. So I think we just traded Nick Foligno to the Vegas Golden Knights.
Spell MBA. So that puts me in a different category. You mentioned Savard.
Yeah. Savard would be another one, but his name has been out there for a while. And I'm a bit surprised he hasn't been traded yet. Again, maybe Yarmo is just asking too much and the veteran GMs are just waiting for the asks to come back down to earth. He'll get traded. Teams are always looking for depth. And, you know, if he's not a plan A or a B, I don't think David Savard's a bad plan C if you're looking to you know, all these guys are always hunting for top four. But what's wrong with adding a 5-6 guy?
Yeah.
Who, look at, I always go back to
Tampa.
Or Ron Hainsey, yeah. when the Pittsburgh Penguins yeah. picked him up almost off a scrap heap. And without Ron Hainsey, they don't win a Stanley Cup. I mean, this guy just took off and extended his career by, what, another 5-6 plus years. So it'll be interesting. Riley Nash is another name, again, because of contracts. But that one, serviceable player. So I think Jarmo could be one of the busier GMs, potentially.
Riley Nash story, when he was playing with Rick Nash, and you look down the ice time list and you go, why is Rick Nash not playing more? And, and I mean, then you go, oh, okay, that's why. So you've got deadline day on Monday. Will you say the word water tower or running shoes for me at some point?
Water tower or running shoes?
And you got 9 hours. You can throw in water tower or running shoes.
I mean, I feel like I could squeeze in running shoes because I could just find a way. Water tower is going to be a bit of a challenge.
Little bit of a challenge. And you're a big golf guy. Trade deadline is the Monday after the Masters. How do you manage this weekend?
Well, since Bob McKenzie is effectively semi-retired, and he's almost three quarters retired. Who's kidding? We're dusting him off and we'll put him up on stage on Monday as part of our coverage. But I've kind of taken on some of his luxury items since he's been away this year.
Yeah.
So as far as I'm concerned, Saravalli is doing Friday. LeBron is doing Saturday, and either one of them is doing Sunday, just so that I can stay to the glued to the, no, that's not good. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to work my phones. I'm going to stay on the case here. It's just for TV purposes. I'm probably not going to show up until Monday. So I'll get enough of the Masters. I'll get my full dose.
Who's your pick?
You know, I've got to submit my roster. I'm in a pool, and that's, I feel like it's too easy to go with Jordan Spieth just because of his recent win here. He's tough to overlook, but I might go Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas is my first pick. And then I'm battling between DJ and I can't believe people are overlooking Dustin Johnson. I mean, he is the defending champion here, for heaven's sake.
But I won money. I placed one bet in Vegas, one bet, put $20 down on DJ last year at the Masters.
Wow. What'd that pay?
Like 240 or something like that. Nice. So it was good. Yeah, it was good. Yeah. Still haven't spent it either.
I might go with John Rahm too. Brandon Papa.
Yeah. Hey? Yeah.
Maybe the emotions will be fueled up by being a new dad.
How's your game?
I haven't played yet. I've got a tee time on Friday, which is another reason why I can't do TV.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking I'm taking up way too much of your time and you're going on to play.
Well, I'm looking forward to it because for the first winter ever, I used the simulator a lot this winter, a lot.
Yeah.
Just every Sunday, in fact. So I don't know how well I played or I didn't play. Simulator says I played great, so let's see if it materializes on actual turf.
I actually got the Angus Glen sweater on right now, so I don't know where you're playing, but you know enough people. What do you got?
Royal Ashburn.
We get enough free golf. I'm doing mine for free. At least you're getting something out of it.
I'm not getting anything. I pull full freight. I pay full freight.
No way.
Yes, the only reason, and look, they've been great to my family, but I say family because both my kids have had the privilege of working there and my daughter still works there. So I feel like I gotta, you know, they've helped look after my kids through school and whatnot. So this is my give back right there.
I love it. Hey, we'll have to do this again when we can talk more about the stories in the past and the goofiness that we've been through together. But this has been awesome giving us on the National Hockey League and the Chirp a little bit of an insight into what's going to happen on Monday. Be well, enjoy the day, and water tower or running shoes?
Running shoes, okay, for sure. Okay. And by the way, on a quiz recently, I picked the Vegas Golden Knights as my Stanley Cup favorite team. I'm sticking with it.
Okay, well, that's. I will make sure that you're part of the parade when it happens.
All right, buddy.
Okay, see you, buddy.
All right, take care.
I didn't even go down the path that I normally do with Dregs. whose nickname is Gus, but Double D, all those nicknames. We've got stories upon stories. We could back the bus over on each other for a complete hour. And we will at some point, maybe the off season when we can really get into stuff and don't have to deal with the impending trade deadline. But he does, if you watch the YouTube video of this interview with that I just did with Dreger, in the background, there's a picture of three guys like posing, playing hockey. It's me, Kiprios, and Dreger. And I didn't get a chance to bring it up there. I actually forgot about it. But I think it's cool that Dreger's got a picture of me on his bookshelf where he does all his Zooms. Yeah, I'm a high roller. Minnesota now. We chatted a little bit about the Wild. They've made a push to be in the top of the West right now with Colorado and with Vegas. And I like this team a lot. I used to dread this team. And here's my big mea culpa when it comes to the Minnesota Wild. When the Minnesota Wild were on the broadcast schedule or when I was going to watch them in person, it wasn't the most exciting moment of my life. This team has had a lot of trouble shedding the trap image that they used to wear. Like we're talking 15 years ago. It's moved along a little bit, but taken massive steps since Billy Guerin took over as general manager. Now, this team that I didn't want to watch is fast, they're fun, they're exciting, they're skilled, and most of all, the guys out there, when they're playing, seem to really enjoy themselves. And that's probably the best part about, along with Kirill Kaprizov and being able to get up the ice and Kevin Fiala and those, but they've really transitioned while keeping a couple of pillars in Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. So a lot of the credit goes to Billy Guerin, his coach, Dean Evason, and they've done a change in culture. And they're not only having a good season, they're having a great season, a surprising season, and a fun season. So we caught up with Billy Guerin of the Minnesota Wild on an off day in Las Vegas to chat about his team and the expectations of this club. I'm going to start you right back to the playing days. Do you remember your first goal and your last goal as a player? Most guys remember their first goal, but do you remember the last one as well?
Oh, man. That's a good... Yeah, I remember my first goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was in the playoffs against the New York Rangers, against John Van Beesbrouck. It's kind of funny. My first goal... So that was the first goal I scored in the NHL, but they gave me... But that was in the playoffs.
So you got the puck from your second goal, which was the regular season?
I ended up scoring three in that series. But then the following season, I started in the regular season and scored against the Whalers. And they're like, hey, congrats, your first NHL goal.
And you're like,
so I guess I have two.
So do you actually have the puck from the goal against Beezer?
No. I don't have that puck. I have the puck against Frank Peter Angelo in Hartford. I don't know.
Your last goal was against the Islanders, from what I can tell. Scored two in one game. You scored two in that game.
That must have been because you know what, too? That was the last goal. That was the last regular season goal scored at the Mellon Arena.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't have that puck either.
So I got that going for me.
you closed the building.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Hey, when you were a player, how differently is being a general manager than when you were playing or what you thought of it?
Yeah, it's much different. It's much different. I think when you're a player, all you think the GM does is just make trades and, you know, well, there's a lot of truth to that. We do make the trades, but there's a whole other side to it. I mean, there's a, you know, relationship with the business side of the company. There's an entire staff of amateur scouts, pro scouts, you know, player development that you have to, you know, put people in place to run and oversee and do things like that. And it's a much bigger operation than you would think. And, you know, there's a lot to it. It's a busy job.
Is it strange at all that you're at the same level as Lou and you played for Lou?
I wouldn't say I'm at the same level.
Okay. Well,
I have this
same title, sort of.
No, it is. I actually spoke to him yesterday, and he's such a great guy, and like he's really become like a mentor on this side of it too. Mm-hmm. And I love our conversations. I mean, sometimes, you know, you look at your phone and 45 minutes or an hour has gone by and you're just still talking about just things, but he's been extremely helpful and giving great advice and somebody that I can lean on. And but it is weird. Like just, you know, having discussions with him and stuff like that. It's great.
It's kind of like seeing your high school teacher, like when you're 26 years old, like, and you're having a beer with them. Like what the hell is going on here?
I didn't know you drank.
Have you tried to talk trade with them? Have you done anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about different players and things like that, but nothing's really come to fruition. It's, you know, he's the type of guy too. I think if he's got something in mind, he'll just cut right to the chase. He doesn't beat around the bush.
How much, where would you describe your style, or how would you describe your style as a manager?
I like a collaborative model. Like I honestly like including everybody. I like empowering the guys that I have, you know, working with me. And, you know, I like to say working with me rather than working for me. Mm-hmm. I really do. I want, when I give a guy a job and a title, you know what, let him do it and trust him to do it. You know, I have to check in with these guys and, you know, I have to keep tabs on everything, but I really believe in all the guys that I have, and I want them to have the freedom to do what they feel is right. You know, it's not just my way or the highway. So like, you know, hey, look, with our amateur scouting, I have a certain way that I learned how to set that up. But with Judd Brackett, I said, look, this is what I like to do. This is how I know things, but I want Judd to put his, you know, his personal touch on it. That's his department, and he has to make it run the way he needs it to run. So go ahead and, you know, change what you need to change. Or Chris Kelleher with the pro scouting, just do what you need to do to make it run the way you want to run it. And then, you know, it's got to work. I really want everybody to feel empowered and included. And, you know, it's a team effort. I need these guys.
I ask you that with a purpose, because one of the things that I love about your style is you're the same guy that I knew when I covered you in Edmonton way back when, for a little bit of time. Is you're casual, you're off the cuff a little bit, but you're serious and you're focused. Did you ever try and be the button up executive when you first got into management and that didn't work, or were you always just the same guy?
Didn't work.
Didn't work. Did you try it?
Yeah. You know, it,
we all sort of want to fit into that. We've got this vision. We got to be management. We got to be in the box.
I did try a little bit, but then I'm like, you know what? It's just not me. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I got to a certain level of success because of being who I was. And you know what? And I don't know, you know, I've had a ton of talks, like, you know, with my wife, and my wife's just like, what are you doing? Like, you don't say stuff.
She
like
calls
that.
You out.
Completely. She's like, just knock it off. Be who you are. And you know what? Yeah, you're right. I'm a guy who I like to have a good time. I like to smile. I like to laugh. I like to crack jokes and bust chops and things like that. But like when I played, I felt like I did that in the locker room and things like that. But when it was time to work, and time, you know, when they dropped the puck, I was focused and I was there. And that's the way I am, you know, as a GM. You know, one of the things I love most about the job is, like, on a daily basis, I get to set the tone for our work environment. Mm-hmm. And what it's going to be like. And when you step into the office, you know, how it's going to be. And I don't like a tense, you know, office, like a work area. Just come in and be who you are. And, but when it's time to work, we're going to work.
Have you overachieved this year?
I don't think so. I don't think we have. I think when you look at our roster, maybe maybe the names aren't as sexy as some teams, but we've got some really good players. And you know what? We've got a really good coaching staff. And I think when you have the players buy into the changes that we've implemented and made, things go well. And I think, and our guys have performed. We've got a couple of really good young players in like Fiala and Kaprizov, and our defensive core is excellent. Our goalies have played great. We've gotten depth scoring from four lines. So have we overachieved? No, I don't think so.
So the teams that you're competing against right now in Vegas and Colorado are all in. Are you at that stage though yet?
That's a good question. Approaching the deadline, to answer your question, yeah, we're all in. Yes. Like we feel we cannot just compete with everybody, but we can beat anybody and anybody can beat us. I mean, the league that's just a league now. Like you have to be at your best every night. Approaching the deadline, I'm not going to sell the farm just for for a rental that's going to, blow town in a couple months. Mm-hmm. We still want to build. We still want to accumulate, prospects and draft picks and things like that. Because we're kind of building on the go. But what I do when I say that we are all in, yeah, we're all in because we want to win. And we expect to win every night. And, we expect our players to do the same.
When you talked about buy-in, that's one area that I've noticed a big change in the last 3-4 years to now with your group. It's a different culture, vibe. You pick the word. Did you notice that right away that it had to change? And if so, how did you do it?
Yeah, it had to change. And, the culture had to change. And not that it was terrible before, but it needed a shot in the arm. And sometimes you have to change personnel. You have to change people. You have to change the way things are done. And, for me, it's all about the team and it's all about winning. And individual achievements or accolades or points or whatever, that it doesn't mean anything. We need to win. And that's what our focus is. And we have to expect to win. We have to talk about winning. We have to carry ourselves like we're winners. We had to get some swagger back into our game. And, I said, the guys have really bought in.
And I don't know whether it's because you're winning more or because it's the culture, but the group looks like they have more fun than they did before. When I knew players that had gone through that organization.
Yeah. Yeah. And hey, look, winning's fun.
It's not the only thing.
You win like, more than lose. That's a good thing. But
yeah.
You know what? I really think too, that if you're allowed to be who you are, and express yourself and Matt Dumba, this guy's got a huge personality. Same with Marcus Foligno, guys like that. They've got great energy, huge personalities. They're fun guys. Well, we want them to be like that.
Yeah.
You know what? Don't come in and feel stifled or anything. Bring that every day. And we want that. You know what? Have some, if you can't have fun in this line of work, man, that's a shame.
And that's a great point, because I'm not sure they did feel comfortable doing that before. And now you do see that.
Yeah. And I like seeing that. It makes me happy to see the guys having fun. It is a close group, and everybody says, oh, the guys are really close, but sometimes that's BS, and you can feel it when they really are, and you can see it by the way teams react to situations on the ice. And you know what? These guys are, they back each other up. They stick up for each other. They block shots for each other. So that in doing that, and I think, you know, from what the coaches tell me, they say hard things to each other too on the bench. Mm. They hold each other accountable. And when you're doing all those things, that means you're a close team.
Is that hard to do? Now, like as a player, say something tough to your teammate during the game?
Not if you're close. Mm. Not if you're close. I mean, there's a way to do it, but I think when you're a real close team, when you have really good teammates, then it makes saying the hard things easier because you know it's from the heart. It's from caring. And I see that. I really do with this group. And, you know, I think people confuse a close team with like, they get confused between that and a team that likes to go out and drink beer together and, yeah. You know, and have barbecues and this and that. I mean, that's good and fine. But the real closeness comes from what you do on the ice together.
Do you have a name for what Kirill Kaprizov does when he circles around the zone and then goes up top and then does another circle and then shoots the puck? Do we have a name for that yet?
I don't know, but it is fun to watch.
Yeah, it is.
And yeah, and I just look at him like, ow, my leg would fall off if I tried that. But it's amazing to watch him go around and, you know, that like when they go into those 10-2s, when he goes into the 10-2s like that, he actually like accelerates out of it, which is kind of crazy. Like I've seen guys do that a bunch before, but he like picks up speed. And if you watch it in slow motion, a lot of times he's on one leg. So his one leg strength is it's crazy.
What part of his game, because you watched him a lot and you watched him a lot on video and then you see him in person, what part impresses you the most about him?
Well,
he's got a fight to his game, right? Too
part. His compete level is off the charts, and I think everybody would see like, oh wow, great skill, great skater. He's got his compete level is off the charts, you know. Like, and he does. He's got some bite. The other night in San Jose, who was it? Logan Couture, you know, ran him and hit him hard. Well, he dusted himself right up. Right off and got right up and went and took a run at Couture and knocked him over. And
he did the same thing against Vegas last time you were in against Chandler
Stephenson. Yeah, it was Chandler Stephenson. He did the same thing. And he doesn't take any shit from anybody.
What's your favorite nickname for him? Kirill the Thrill, Dollar Bill Kirill.
Kirill the Thrill kind of fits.
Yeah.
He's exciting to watch. I mean, he's given our team a shot in the arm and the guys love him. Like he's got a great personality. He's a great teammate. The great thing is that he just wants to win. Like it's not about him and, you know, a new contract or playing time, or he just wants to win.
He might be the most dynamic player the organization's ever had in that with all due respect to the 20 plus years.
For sure. And, you know, I think Gabrick was probably close, but he was straight line speed.
Yeah.
And this kid's just all over the ice. Like I think he is the most dynamic player we've ever had here.
Before I switch over to USA Hockey, how much do you talk to your coaches? I know Dean from our past lives, but you guys are sort of in the same position. You're a couple of years in, he's a year and a half in. What makes that work?
You know what? Cause Dino and I see things a lot of the same way, and it's all about the team and it's all about, including everybody and kind of just being an open book. I talk to him every day. Some days it's, you know, shorter than others, but, the one thing that we love about kind of like this setup where we're in Vegas now for two games and there's a day off in between, but after the game, I don't go down to the coach's room.
Oh, you don't?
No, I come back to my room, and then all the coaches come to my room after. And we'll have a couple beers in here and it gives us all time to decompress And you know what? We'll come in here, we'll have a beer, and we'll all talk about the game for a little bit. And it just gives us time to kind of calm down before we talk. And we all sit around together and just kind of go over it real quick. And Dino just, you know, he includes everybody. You know what? Assistant coaches are sitting here, video guys. You know, my hockey ops guys are sitting here with us, and it's a good group. We work well together, and Dean's done a great job.
Forgot how big the rooms the managers get.
That's pretty nice.
It's got to be good. Where's your 2002 medal?
It's in my office, in my home office. Yeah.
That was a special three-time Olympian. So how did it come about with Stan and this 2022 opportunity?
Yeah. I'm like through the roof excited about this. And
did he call you, or did you send out little vibes?
No. Stan called me, and you know, I guess he had been talking to Beezer for a little while, and Pat Kelleher, and he called me, 10 days ago, and just said,
that
"Hey,
recently.
Look, yeah. Wow. Yeah." He just said, "Hey, look, you know what? I'm going to be the GM of the U.S. Olympic team, and I'd like you to be my assistant GM, and we can do this thing." And I was pumped. I'm very excited. I've always had the USA hockey experience is very, very close to my heart, and I love it. I loved it as a player, and I'm really excited about this one.
Did you guys get anything individually for the 96, the World Cup? Like, did you get a miniature trophy or anything like that?
We got rings.
Oh, you rings? Okay.
So yeah, we got rings.
That's up there, right with the, because that's best on best, and Olympics best on 2002.
That 96 World Cup was, that was one of the greatest experiences of my life. I mean, that was the fastest, dirtiest, meanest hockey ever. And it was awesome. Like US Canada, like it was just crazy. It was crazy. The two teams just hated each other. And, but it was such a, I don't know. It was such a great matchup.
What do you want to look for in a coach then, now that you're going to hire and you've been on three Olympic teams, you've been on that 96 World Cup team. How do you hire a coach for best on best? How do you look at that?
Well, I mean, look, it's going to be Stan's decision in the end. But you know, like Stan said in the press conference, somebody with NHL experience, obviously. But somebody that's got the ability to bring a group together quickly. And, you know, again, we're going to need like tremendous buy-in, because everybody's going to be a star in their team and used to playing a lot. And we need guys to assume a role and be part of the team. And the coach is going to be a huge part of that in getting guys to buy into that and play specific roles. So he's going to be a really important key to this.
So you scored your first goal on Beezer, and now you're working with Beezer.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah. It's crazy how just, you know, guys just stay in the game and things just come full circle. And
is the trade market hot right now? We're closing in. Is it still quiet? How is it before I have to let you go and get back to business?
Yeah, crickets.
Really?
Yeah. Hey, look, there's calls being made. I'm sure other teams have things on the go. We don't have much on the go right now. It's just kind of quiet. But we're talking to different people every day, and I don't expect us to be too active, but you know, if something comes up that makes sense, yeah, we'll do it.
You know, like 5 years ago, I was just talking to Kipper and McLean the other day for the podcast, and we were reminiscing about trade deadline days. And if you would have said crickets 10 days out before the trade deadline, we would have panicked because we had to do that day long coverage. Now it's like, fine, whatever, go for it. Billy, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for doing this. I'm really impressed. The best compliment I can give you is I was working the other night, and a couple of people came up and said, this is so much fun to watch, watching your hockey club, because it's so dynamic and different. and entertaining and successful. So keep at it. Really been impressive.
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. It was good to be on. Thanks for having me.
Crickets. Nobody wants to hear crickets. I did trade deadline day on the main panel, hosted the National Hockey League trade deadline day for Sportsnet forever, even when Dreger was still there, because he moved into the sort of analyst side. And when Billy Guerin was still a player and being moved. So I did that for a number of years. You'd be on the air at 8 a.m. Eastern time, and you'd be off the air at, as far as trade deadline coverage, about 6 p.m. Eastern. And I always felt bad for the guys in the West Coast, because they had to be, our bureaus had to be up early. I dreaded it. I didn't like the day when I first started hosting trade deadline day, because of the pressure that we all put on ourselves. I grew to really enjoy it and have some fun, because it's one of those days where, like, there's no script, and you can show your chops a little bit as a broadcaster. And it was fun. And there'd be people walking back and forth through the background, phones going off on the set, like total improv, and no time. You didn't have to hit a certain moment. You'd have to pay attention to 3 o'clock Eastern, noon Pacific, but that's about it. So a lot of fun. I look forward to it this day, but as a viewer, I also miss it a little bit. So good luck to everybody covering it. James Duthie, everybody at TSN, Dregs, Bob, and the group. Minnesota, they've replaced St. Louis in the West as far as one of the big three. I'm curious, because the Blues are part of that group, along with the Flames or the Dallas Stars, who I thought were virtual locks to make the playoffs this year. Looks like that's going to be a real challenge. We'll see what happens next week on The Chirp with Darren Millard. How different the National Hockey League will look, or will it look any different? Will the Crickets dominate the stage? Then what do those guys do? Everybody on trade deadline coverage. We'll chat with you next week and give you the lowdown and whether or not the odds have changed in the National Hockey League for the Stanley Cup, and who the big movers and shakers were, the winners and losers of trade deadline day as we march towards the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thanks to Darren Dreger. Thanks to Billy Guerin, everybody associated with the Minnesota Wild, for making that happen. And Bob Bender, Robert Bob Bender, who you haven't heard from in a couple of weeks, but he's still here making this thing happen. Leave a rating, subscribe. Send us a comment on whether you're watching on YouTube or whether you're watching or listening on the podcast. Make sure you leave us a note and tell us what you'd like to improve us to improve on, or maybe just how much you're enjoying this podcast. We'll chat with you next week on The Chirp with Darren Millard.